Lives Were Around Me is a theater piece for a very small audience set in Vancouver's downtown East Side. It was conceived and directed and is hosted by David McIntosh. An audience of three waits at the bar in the Alibi Room, a local eatery, until someone comes to take them on a tour of Vancouver's historic center. Lives Were Around Me has defied labels. It's been described as evocative, cryptic, and disorienting by the same people who say it is rewarding, cool, and transformative. David is a co-founding member of Battery Opera, a Vancouver-based performing arts company, and David McIntosh is here with me today. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Mordecai.
I wanted to start with the idea of the audience. Is it limited to three people?
Yes, it is. Three is the ideal number, I think. Sometimes we can squeeze in four people, but three seems to be the most effective audience.
So I'm assuming you've chosen this style of production in part because of wanting to have a limited audience. And what is it that you're aiming for in terms or find satisfying in the closeness, I guess, that you have with the audience with you?
Well, I think with three people and a performer or a guide or myself, you have an intimacy that invites the audience to join in with you. You become a quartet, as it were. So that was one of the main reasons I found that with three people, the performers can relay the text and be in the environment as a group, as a quartet with the people, and then can play off all the things that are happening. And it also allows people to enter into a direct relationship. Sometimes if you have an audience of four, you end up with two couples, and they tend to divide and stay very much together. But three seem to be a very nice number. Also, it's not... if you have three people and a performer in public, then you have a group of four, which is quite common. It's not an intrusion onto a neighborhood or a street or a public space. Whereas if you have a larger group, then you become a bit of a pain in the ass because you take up too much room and, you know, people have to accommodate you. So that was important to me.
Why don't we have you sort of relay where people go on this tour, sort of the concrete, where do you start?
Okay.
Where does it?
Well, it starts, you go to the Alibi Room, which is on Alexander, just off Main, and that's a bar, and you wait there or have a drink and or some food, whatever you like.
You being the
audience. The audience, yeah, mm-hmm. For your appointed time. And there you sign a waiver stating that we're not responsible for whatever happens over the next hour. And then you eventually are asked by the people there to go outside and meet me. And I escort you from the Alibi to meet your guide. And usually what happens is... I have to leave to find another group or something, and I leave you alone for a bit as a group, and your guide finds you and takes you on a geographical trip, basically around the 200 block East Hastings in Cordova, and inside a few institutions in that block.
And why those institutions?
The institutions we use are a bar, which is a meeting place, a place to sit, and we also use the police museum and the coroner's examination room. And those two places were very evocative to me of ideas of people's lives and the fragments of people's lives being presented as evidence or history. So it's an interesting place to examine those actual, in some cases actual, body parts that are fragments of people from the past, along with narratives from the present.
So it's a sort of forensic autopsy process of trying to piece things together, or?
The piece itself is an invitation, I think, for you to consider the lives around you and the fragments of lives you encounter in people, in architecture, in history, your understanding of history today. So there is kind of a forensic deconstruction, I would say, or construction. The performer who takes you eventually disappears, and then another performer escorts you out.
So there are many unexpected things happening, or things which create, I would assume, for an audience, if I project myself into this, as to sort of wondering what I've got involved with, is that there must be a text as well.
Yes, there is, yeah.
And what is that text?
Well, there's a text of just conversing, which I do with the audience if they wish to, as I take them and I eventually pick them up. There's also the text of the guides, and the guides change. They're not the same guides every show. But they use a text of from James Kelman's a novel called Translated Accounts. And that's all the text they use. So there's a... and that text basically is someone giving an account of an event and projecting how people view them by assuming who those people are. So there's, and then it's been translated by a government agency. So it's very hard to follow. But what does come through is the idea of making assumptions of other people's lives, so as to justify your life, or to make sense of your life, where you are, how you got here, and what you're doing here. So that's the another template on which you experience that hour. It's the intersection of those things, of that text, of the actual physical environment, the human environment, and your journey through it, and trying to understand and connect all those things, which may not be possible, but I think the effort is very evocative of something, which I'm quite curious to find out.
Well, it seems to me that there's a serious challenge that you're posing to your audience, a person in this situation. From what you described, if I'm projecting myself into it, we'll have to be mentally very, very active and even with the senses to try and connect some things that don't explain themselves automatically.
Yeah, I think the piece almost works in a way it overloads your senses. So I think that people come to performance with a lot of anxiety, especially they're trying to get it, to figure out what it's about, because it's often prescriptive. So what I tell people as we're walking there is that you can't understand everything you hear. It's not possible. And I'm trying to allow them to let go of that expectation, because it is not possible for you to make sense of everything that goes on in the piece. But what happens is, once you abandon that, all these connections start appearing, materializing, and they're not the same every night. And then you're actually involved in the performance as you're part of it, because you are making those connections, or they're happening for you. You don't have to work too hard. It's quite easy, especially if you have a drink.
Which is done at the beginning when you're assembling, right? When you gather.
Yeah, that's a drink on your bill, but there is a drink provided elsewhere in the tour.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. Do you solicit responses explicitly from your audience and thereby have some way of...
Not explicitly, because I don't want to create anxiety that you're going to be tested at the end of this show. But, we usually give them an invitation to respond to the show. It's I call it an evidence statement. And so I just asked you a couple of questions about what you saw, a moment you remembered, I think a color, a word maybe. And I usually ask people to mention three things they carried with them in their bag or on their person. And then I usually ask people to connect the two, because it's you know, your what you bring to the to your experience and what you experienced. So you can reinterpret the piece or that experience of an hour and create your own evidence of what happened. And then you can you could give that to me via one of the people at the Alibi, or you could throw it away, or you could give it to your friend, or you could not do it at all. It's totally up to you.
Is the audience in background quite different? That is, it's in the downtown east side. Do a lot of people come from far away in the city, or are they?
I'm not really sure. I haven't tracked that. But yeah, I think so far there's been a fairly wide range of audience members. There are some people from England and from the Netherlands who came as well. And everyone brings their own baggage, I guess, to the area. There are assumptions of what the downtown east side is and what their relationship to it is. So, and that to me is interesting as well, to examine what your assumptions are.
If I would ask, what would be the primary objective you have in relation to your audience? It's a difficult question, but what might you say?
I think it's just to consider the life, consider the lives around you and how you perceive them and how you perceive yourself.
Is it so to break? I mean, we often feel we know things when in fact our knowledge is
very
fragmentary, shaky. Yeah. Are you shaking that kind of presumption of, well, I know where I am, I know what's happening, I know who you are, I know who I am?
Yeah, the solidity of history and evidence and narratives, I guess I'm asking you to question. I'm trying to get you to experience the shifting kind of impossibility of that.
Is the downtown east side an area that you chose because you have some attachment to it, familiarity with it?
I think
however
so.
Shaky.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's an area I'm fairly familiar with. I have a personal narrative engaged. I have several personal narratives as being a cab driver, living in the area, working in the area, in social services and in the construction industry. So I'm quite familiar with the geographic location of it. And I also, being a citizen of Vancouver, this is the historic center of the city. So it's not an isolated, standalone area. It's actually the center of the entire city. So no matter where you live in the Lower Mainland, this area has been created by you as a collective entity. So I find it interesting and crucial in that regard.
I've been speaking with David McIntosh. He's the creator, director, and host of a roving theater piece set in the downtown east side. It's called Lives Were Around Me. For more information of these and other performances, you can check out batteryopera.com.